Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, how are you, Madonna?
Cool, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Nice.
Hello, everyone. We're just trying to get Stacy up here to join us, and then we will get started. Hello, Oscar. Hey, Chris. How's everyone doing today? I hope you're all having a good Friday. Are you back, Madonna?
Yes, I'm back for some reason. I can't get my what are they called? My iPads to connect. So sad.
Oh, weird.
I know. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. I'm always looking forward to Friday.
Yeah, it's been a long week for me, but I'm really happy to be here and very happy for the weekend. It's almost here.
That's true. Stacy's here. Woohoo!
All right, Stacy, can you hear us? And can we hear you?
Yeah, I guess it just doesn't support earbuds sometimes.
Yeah, it's still in progress, I think.
No worries.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that they do a web interface soon so that, real microphones can be used and headphones and stuff.
Well, it's not like we don't know people. We know who to yell at.
I like that.
I mean, pretty much that's how I get any mentions on GitHub nowadays. Stacy sent me this problem. Basically, I'm terrible about opening actual, bad tickets. I just find out who's ever in charge, and I'm like, going, I'm gonna message you.
Man, alrighty. Well, I do have to ask, Stacy, you posted all this coffee. Are you drinking coffee right now, or did you already have one?
Good question.
One. All right. No. So I prepped for this. I made a latte right before we came on. I think I used up all my pretty points for the day on the first one. So the next one has been pretty garbage looking by comparison. And then I also have a lovely just straight up espresso of the same blend in a nice double-walled insulated glass. So, woohoo.
Nice. My wife actually just got back from an errand and picked me up a pour over from one of our local coffee roasters. So I get to enjoy that while we hang out.
I very much approve. I was thinking about like doing pour over this Friday, but then I was like, this feels like an espresso day. I feel like it changes depending on the day. And then I typically drink tea in the afternoon.
Nice. What about you, Madonna? Do you have a coffee or beverage of choice?
Funny enough, I'm not a coffee person because it really makes me stay up late at night. When I drink coffee, I can't sleep and I don't like getting anxious. So I am a tea person. So chai latte is my favorite. I, however, don't like the sugar they put in there. It's too much. So I'm wondering what's going to be the best for me. Mostly, I just get sometimes it doesn't have the milk or the sugar, but chai latte. Yes. I hope I'm not the only one.
So
Oh no.
if you have a local like Indo-pak, you can actually just go and get the masala like spice bags already ready with the whole spices, and then you can just brew it as is. Plus, you can just get the chai tea bags and then just add milk and sugar to your liking as well.
That's a very good point, because that's what they told me today. Thank you, Stacy. That's what they said. Like, I don't want, it's too sugary. Can I just get something that I would make that fits my flavor?
Entirely. And I also highly encourage if you kind of have the time at some point to make a Malaysian style cold ginger tea. If you like chai, you basically brew it in milk just like you would a typical chai. And then, well, chai just means tea, but you know what we call chai. It keeps super great in the fridge too. So in both cases, for just a nice little cool treat on it from time to time.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think, beverages are one of the more polarizing or interesting topics that all programmers deal with, and it's a bit of a vice in a lot of ways too, because they're not a cheap hobby to get into, but it's a lot of fun, and If anyone wants to come up and tell their stories about what they like to enjoy, please do. Also, if you have any questions for us as we get into our discussion, please come up and ask or send a DM to me or Madonna and we can ask for you. But yeah, just want to introduce Stacy. She is an amazing personality in the Android dev community. And if you've been to a conference, you've most likely heard or seen her there. I remember one of the first conferences I went to was a AndDev 360, and I believe I met you there, Stacy, and I was a lot more timid back then, but you gave me a woman droid 3D printed pin, which I still have on my desk.
Oh yeah, like, well, so I think I have it listed on most of my profiles, but kind of the unofficial swag lady kind of thing. I've definitely been a little bit swimming in swag over at my house since events have been just on a little bit of a standby, we'll just call it. But yeah, I find that stickers and pins and other things like that for me are a fantastic icebreaker. It immediately gives you something to talk about, something to share, and nobody's usually very mad when they get something for free.
That's super true. I never really thought about it that way, but it is a cool way to just, you know, if you don't want to necessarily strike up a conversation or can't find the words, and if you walk up to someone and offer them something or give them something, then they're not going to really deny it, especially if it's a sticker. You know, we all have to collect those for the laptop backs.
Pro tip, get a case for your laptop. That way you can take your stickers with you when you leave that job. I think the saddest thing was a couple of jobs where I'm like going, oh, I'm losing all my stickers.
Yeah, I've definitely made that mistake before. I've tried to pull them off sometimes, and it's a lot more work than it's worth in the end. Like using like a hot air dryer and trying to peel these stickers off to save them. It's a little too much.
Yeah, a hot air gun or a hair dryer, either one.
A hair dryer, yeah.
Yeah, there's like, but the problem is if you use stuff like goof off can cause some other problems with any plastic parts you have. But yeah, like you can just end up ruining it. So, a lot of these cases though that have some kind of printing or other kind of texture on them. That isn't just straight aluminum, you can actually remove the stickers and place them in different places. Unfortunately enough, that's had the problem of my toddler just loving to play with the stickers on my laptop. So I've lost a few because they're easy to remove now, but it makes him happy and it's opportunity for me to change him out, I guess.
I like that.
Having kids is all about positivity, right? Like, find whatever's gonna make it, like, it's not the worst.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Actually, my kids, I got great stickers from, I think she's called, I'm forgetting her name. She sent my kids pretty nice stickers, and immediately all of them went to the fridge. Like, they posted all of them on the fridge. And I'm like, oh my God, we're just renting this apartment. What are we gonna do when we start moving? Are we gonna buy a new fridge? So I'm waiting to hear what he'll say.
Oh, no. You can remove any stickers pretty much by just using rubbing alcohol. You can buy from the dollar store. It comes off, all of it.
Oh, that's a great hug. Wow. Thank you, Stacy.
Madonna's going to go clean her fridge this weekend.
Yeah, as someone who kind of close to me told me just the other day, it's like, Stacy, your problem is not that you know a little bit about a lot of things, it's that you know a lot about a lot of things. I'm like, this is a problem. I get it.
I don't think it's a problem. I think it's amazing. I think that, you know, you have so many interesting hobbies, and it's so cool to see some of the things you post, especially for, you know, my overlapping interests with the coffee and keyboards and stuff like that.
Oh, don't get me started on keyboards. Oh my goodness. I don't post. So like the only stuff that I actually post in like public is like tip of the iceberg. kind of things on some of my hobbies, because I'm pretty sure if the people actually knew like how deep and how much and all this other stuff, they'd be like, what is wrong with you?
Cool. Well, let's see if we can get into some Android topics. I'm just wondering, what are you dealing with in Android right now, and what are you looking forward to?
So, at least in my space, I'm gonna kind of preface this in saying that, I've had the privilege of working in an organization that really values doing things the most right way, and the latest and greatest way as possible. And so I think that just things that I'm running into, and folks that I work with, and also just folks in the community I'm close with are running into, are kind of related to all of the latest and greatest, right? So part of that might be, really building out these large applications in Compose, not trivial ones, right? And what are some idiosyncrasies with using Tilt in multiple locations, and how to manage that with Compose? I think there's more and more interest around things with navigation and navigation patterns with Compose because of just some of the newness that's going on with that. How to get things out of view models. I don't want to go into too much at this point in time, just to, I think there's a lot of starting topics that we can pull from just that.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's so much variability in how things are going right now with all this new technology that's being introduced. But I the thing that piqued my interest was the hilt stuff. I haven't used hilt. I've either stuck with straight Dagger or haven't had to deal with configuring a bunch of dependency injection stuff recently myself. So how has that process been with using hilt across, what was it, multiple modules?
So yes, I have been historically so a very big proponent of really building out modular architecture. So that means splitting out your UI, splitting out your logic, splitting out the things for your network layer, even segmenting out your third-party libraries as much as possible. Basically defining interfaces for anything that you might click in and click out. Because the nature of just Android in and of itself means that you are going to have like these migration points that are going to necessitate like you switch like your entire networking stack, and how painful that can be if you don't have those interfaces defined. And the same thing for your UI, right? So we have Compose now, but remember we went through massive migrations when it came to constraint layout and constraint layout, 2.0 versus 1.0 in beta and all of those kinds of things, right? If we had put all of that defined into a singular space, it would have been a really, I'm sure a lot of us have direct experience in the pain in doing those kinds of migrations. So it enables a lot of click in, click out, even if you're just talking about for a small team. But once you start talking about scalability, right, it's the ability to have multiple people work essentially on the same code base or something that compiles to the same code base without having PR interaction issues. So you can merge happily and continuously. And if you want to, if you've done kind of your homework in some of these respects, on a if you're doing a modular architecture, that means eventually you can libraryize code that doesn't really change that often. So that means you can pre-compile it and then just grab it or keep it relatively static or have it go to some other repository system you have internally. And now you've cut your build times down to less than a minute, right? So I know there's a lot of little individual items I've touched on there, but there's a lot of benefits, even if it seems like it's hard to do.
Yeah, so when you say you pull a pretty static module into a library, does that mean you actually pull it into its own repo, or do you prefer to keep that in the same repo, like repository, so that you have access to that source code within the same project, or do you actually pull it in as a dependency?
So it very much depends on what it is and how often it's changing. So if I'm doing something where I'm just, it's a single endpoint, the endpoint isn't going to change that often, or maybe it's something that's going to, like a third party or something like that. I can pre-compile that as its own library and then import it. For stuff that might change or have interdependency and things like that, just, keep that in its own module, keep that kind of data, that separation, all of that kind of fun stuff. And I think the other part that you were talking about was when it came to static resources, some of us, especially myself historically, have had libraries from third-party vendors that are not hosted. So you have to put them in locally in order to make sure that you are kind of rightfully protecting your own code, because the way that compile paths and everything else can work, especially when you start looking at some of the like optimization stuff and injection and kind of the whole picture, putting that library code and whatever like accessors you need to in its own like module is a much happier way to live. And to that respect, I take the same philosophy when it comes to optimization files and all of those kinds of configurations. So even ProGuard is modularized. So, you don't have one long, ridiculous file to deal with.
Wow, that sounds like that could be a conference talk or blog post right there.
That's what I wanted to say. That's pretty amazing, Stacy.
I mean, it's all done in the name of, I don't want to deal with this. So, just from our standpoint, and this is actually something that has been done historically in other code bases. There's nothing new about splitting out ProGuard files. But the nice thing is because we have the ability to do Kotlin Gradle files, we also have the ability to do inline functions, which means that we can write a simple function, for the, where it says like state your ProGuard, we can just, basically give it a, star ProGuard file thing, right? And all it does is it takes all those .pro file, .pro files, the ProGuard files, and then just concatenates them into a single ProGuard file at runtime. So you can keep all of your things very organized, but you're still letting the tools do its job in putting everything together. And there's no like hit to performance or anything else like that in terms of build. So if you want to talk Kotlin Gradle files too, I'm a big fan of that. I've changed a little bit from putting the dependencies in the build RC to now the TOML kind of thing, just so that you can kind of share that a little bit more effectively across code bases. Because doing the build SRC as like a sub repo becomes its own set of headaches, but yeah, lots of stuff again. I just keep bringing one to the next, I guess.
I mean, it's making my job easy. You're coming up with all the topics.
I guess this is the benefit of, I think this year is my 13th year writing Android code, which is ridiculous. I kind of am like going like, why am I still bad at this? like not bad, but I'm just like, I haven't mastered it all. It's impossible. It's both a detractor and the greatest thing ever about being an Android developer. Being an Android developer means that there is always something new to learn. There's always something new that you can expand in. And you have the ability to touch everything. When we look at our kind of analogs in other industries, they don't necessarily all get to touch data layer code. They don't all get to make big architecture decisions. They don't all get to dive into user experience and accessibility. There's a really lovely kind of cohesiveness in terms of being able to imagine something and be able to physically build every part of it as an Android developer that you just, I find it very difficult to do that elsewhere unless they label you as quote full stack. And full stack, unfortunately, is kind of a lie. So there's just, it's been the kind of greatest thing ever for me to have just kind of hitched my ride onto the right pony early on, I guess.
Yeah, so I'm actually very curious, how did you get started in Android development? What drew you to Android originally? And this is something we usually talk about with our guests, just to, you know, talk about the path to where we are now and how we got there. And I'm very curious, because 13 years is a long time.
Me too.
So it goes way further than that. I'll give you the abridged version that doesn't mention names, I guess. So my first mobile device I ever programmed for was the Palm One in sixth grade. If that gives you an idea of how old I am, there you go. But my father worked for what was US Robotics at the time, and he came back home with a Palm One. We had recently moved to Chicago. That's where their office was. And I thought it was the coolest thing I've ever seen in my whole life. So I sold like my Game Boy and a bunch of stuff at garage sales, gave him, you know, the $100 that he asked for, and got, you know, a Palm One. And by then they had also like given everybody a Palm One too inside the company. So I think he was just, you know, he's being a little nice, right? Because they were extremely expensive at the time. I started playing games and other things, and I ended up finding just some like bugs with a game I really loved that made me stuck. And I had invested so much time in this stupid character on this Palm One game. And I ended up then trying to contact the developers. And then they were kind of like, well, do you want to try and fix it? Because it was shareware, right? It was not, there was not this concept of open source like we know it. It existed, but it wasn't prevalent, right? When it came to user applications. And so I pretended that I was like 16 or something when I was like in seventh grade or whatever. I'm like, I'm the most adult, like 12 or 13 year old ever. And basically was doing, you know, kind of Palm stuff, little tiddly bits. It was my first exposure to C, and most specifically micro C, because I'd only done, you know, like HTML and basic prior to that. Family of engineers, it's kind of what happens. Eventually moved on when the iPod came out, and started hacking on those, helped with ports of Rockbox and iPod Linux, did a lot with the iPod Wizard community. Hey, hey, what's up? Learned how to hex edit files. And like how firmware works and all this other stuff. And I continued with Palm. Then the iPod Touch came out. Remember, the iPod Touch came out before the iPhone, like availability wise. Started hacking on that, made some people not so happy, and kind of got into that community, which then somebody sent me a thing that said, hey, you want to try on this HTC G1, see what's going on? And I still have that today. So I started on like embedded stuff on CyanogenMod, got really involved with that. And that launched me into my first paid Android gig, doing security and OS stuff for phone manufacturers.
Then that moved into OS and apps. Then that moved into just pure app space. So that's where I'm at today. Abridged, a long story, but a little abridged. So,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so really, like, as the OS matured, you progressed into more apps. So you kind of just, you know, did your job and helped it get to where it needed to be.
I mean,
that's amazing.
It's been a really awesome journey because just by virtue of being around, I guess, as long as I have, I've had the ability to work on everything from, you know, kernel work, right? So even device drivers and that kind of thing. Also the network space, like literally connecting back and forth over LTE and 3G networks and like how all the radios work and everything, to kind of crossover stuff that happens in the frameworks, and then like the application space. And I just find that there's so much joy and satisfaction that you can find in every single stage. And there's just so many opportunities to go deep or to go wide, you know, whatever you're kind of feeling, I guess. There's just so much more opportunity than I think everyone realizes.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think that hearing about these journeys is really helpful to people who are trying to get into the Android development space. And so if you could give some advice to those people, what would that be? How would you recommend they start or continue their journey, or what should they focus on right now?
So if you're looking to get into the kind of Android space, maybe you're a fresh graduate from a boot camp. Really what it is, it's about getting connected to what's going on in the space. So this is a great example of where we are right now. This is telling you like all these kind of tips and tricks and little small tidbits that you can keep in the back of your brain to help you learn and progress forward. So that's the first side, like get involved in community. This is true regardless of platform. So even if you are getting into doing a React web code, this still holds true. So the other part of that is to find mentors. And what I don't mean is somebody who's, you know, especially at this stage, is going to be spending hours and hours, you know, consistently with you, you know, every single week, but to find someone who can provide, and multiple someones, right, that can provide you 15, 30 minutes to give you kind of feedback and touches on things that you just find confusing, things that you don't know about. And I say this especially as people who don't have jobs in the space already, right? And part of that is to also work into an application or a suite of small applications that you can bring into a job. It says so much when you have a GitHub that has actual, like an actual even example project up and available. It says that you care about what you're doing, that you're learning. I can see where you're progressing and that you're invested, right? So that's the thing I would say, regardless of whatever kind of platform you're looking at. Now, most specifically, when we start talking about you in your job, your first job, you know, you're a junior engineer or you're like an engineer one, a good place to work will have someone who is kind of like your immersion mentor, right? Who's there to provide, you know, your connections and other things like that. And if they don't have that, maybe ask, right? So you're learning, everyone else wants you to succeed. We're all on your side. So how do we help you as a new engineer get there?
I think that's a very good point, Stacey. And I also wanted to add something here. Stacey, if anybody didn't know, Stacey she's a principal engineer for Stitch Fix. And she's an amazing contributor to the Android community. I just want to thank you, Stacey, for doing so many great things for the Android community. It's so interesting that the other day, actually, I was looking at Women Tech Makers video, and I saw one video that you did about a talk on talking. And I thought that was a very great talk. And if anybody has not seen it, I can link it up. If Stacey, if Tizzy okay with me sharing that. And that's for anybody that wants to ever try talking.
Well, I mean, yeah, like that's why it's recorded. It's on the internet. Take it, you know, like take it, run with it, rehash it, whatever you need to do to help make you or somebody else better. That's a little bit of my philosophy.
It was great. I was like, oh my God, Stacy, she's amazing.
No, the difference is I'm practiced. I try as best I can to live the virtues that I hold for myself, and don't get the idea that all of this just happens. I have, you know, the better part of a decade in giving public, you know, in doing public speaking, in putting together slide presentations and doing so quickly or concisely. A lot of this is just experience and practice. And the more you think about and reflect on what you do, whatever it might be, the better you will become at it. I personally struggle with, and you've probably gotten this a little bit, I tend to ramble. I go from one thing to the next, and I maybe don't provide the correct pauses. So, you know, it's something that I'm personally working on. There's always opportunity to become better, not just technically, but I would say, you know, a big thing, especially later in your career, is about communication skills, written and oral.
Yeah, I think all of this has been really great advice. Sorry, Madonna, go ahead.
Oh, no, I wanted to just say that's pretty great advice, Stacy, and thank you for being there to guide us. We're new ones, because I feel like I'm pretty new in this space.
Yeah, and I just want to add, like, one of the best pieces of advice that I got that is related to this is to learn in public. And that goes back to the GitHub profiles and putting yourself out there that Stacy was talking about, because then people can see your journey, or if they're curious, or if you're applying places, like, they can see what you started with and how you learned and how you progressed. And it gives you a story to tell them. And as people, as humans, we are very attracted to stories and what they look like and the culmination of the results. So, oh, go ahead, Stacy.
Oh, no, I was just going to say absolutely.
Awesome. I have a couple questions coming in from some DMs. But before that, just want to, again, encourage everyone to feel free to come up and ask questions yourself. If you don't want to speak today, just DM me or Madonna or reply to one of the tweets that we pinned at the top, and we can ask on your behalf. Before we dive into questions, Madonna, do you have anything that you have on your mind?
Yes, not a question, but I just wanted to say, if you're not following Stacy, please go ahead and follow her. She shares amazing stuff. And yes, that's what I wanted to say for now.
All right. So first question that I got is, how do you communicate and collaborate with your designer peers in an iOS heavy culture when your Android needs a little bit of that TLC to go through the different mock stages? And, you know, I think that's something that every Android developer has dealt with, where you're like, hey, here's the designs, and it's like, what, this is iOS, and you're like, that's fine, you can put on your design hat and translate this, right? So do you have any advice for those people in those situations to handle that?
Absolutely. This is something that I am deeply, deeply passionate about and have been in, you know, kind of all stages of my career, especially once I was told touching more UI and UX. Part of your job is not just to program what is, you know, so to speak, handed to you. Your job, regardless of whatever it is that you do, is to be an advocate for your platform. And if you have knowledge, and you have the ability to share that knowledge accordingly in order to kind of get the results that you want, you need to do so in a concerted effort, right? So in this iOS quote heavy world, that doesn't mean that it's exclusionary to Android principles. I would say a great example of this is just the kind of material design resources that we see in general. Really, they don't speak to any particular platform. What they do speak is to overall design principles and heuristics. And once you kind of have those things nailed and you have a certain amount of buy-in and understanding with your design brethren, that your job is not to kind of
force Android on them, but to help them in, as a partner, right? In doing your work and have them start to build up those skill sets. Don't just go, well, I need Android now, right? And expect that they understand all of those things. Help them learn, help them find resources and understand that it takes time. Platform, learning how to develop for a platform, just like you had to learn for Android, they also have to go through the same process, just in a slightly different way. So be a teacher, be an advocate, and then also come in with the understanding that no matter what you do, given that they are currently, you know, focused right now on a one platform, you're asking them to learn more. You are asking them to do more. If they're already stressed, how do you actually bring that into how the designs come together into the in the first place? And so it's not that we're going to, you know, design for iOS, then design for Android, but how do we design systems and overall heuristics that align with both platforms? And then how do we tweak what, and then we add tweaks, right? So it's shifting from I'm developing for one, you know, at one platform to I'm developing for both platforms simultaneously, and then accounting for their idiosyncrasies and put some of that back on you as the developer to help in that ownership and that transition.
Yeah, I totally agree. This is something that I'm super passionate about as well. In one of my previous jobs, I actually got like this movement started called that we just named Android First, where like we wanted to push for getting Android to have that first seat in this consideration. And I think a lot of this comes from people who are in design usually have an iPhone, and there's cool things that Android can do or cool patterns that you know this operating system and mobile phones allow us to take advantage of that they don't even know about. So one of the best places to start for me that worked really well was to just show some of these really cool things that users come to know and expect, namely being what used to be the back button. It's so nice to just be able to press back and have control of your destinations, but there wasn't something like that on iOS, and it was just a very simple place to start this conversation.
I would say a little bit of a failing I sometimes encounter with Android developers is they don't always know or acknowledge everything that iOS is capable of too, and all of the different paradigms there. So just as you know, I say bring the understanding of Android to your design group, bring a little bit of iOS understanding under your belt, because being able to design and build systems that work for all platforms is going to be a huge skill when you start talking about building out those systems and jumping up to the next levels in your career. So it's opportunities kind of abound, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Plus then having this relationship with the designers and with the iOS members of your team, or even other parts of the community, like it just helps you grow. It helps everyone grow. And there's really no negative. All right. Madonna, do you have anything to say on that? Or do you have another question?
No, actually, just to mention, what Stacey said is what we actually did to, or we do to at our workplace too. Whenever we get those kinds of like designs that look like most similar to iOS, we just kind of like share great material design resources with our our designing team, and then collaborate together. So it's more of a learning process to both of us, which is always super amazing. And on that note, I have another question, Stacey, that was sent to my DM. Let me open it up. So this is what it says: I feel so shy, and I'm not confident enough to participate during technical meetings in office. What can I do?
So I'm guessing that actually some of the things that are related to your confidence in that is that you may not know everything that's being talked about, or everybody's coming in with a certain amount of assumed knowledge. And that is a major, major problem, because if everyone is proceeding without explaining or without giving context, they are not being inclusive. So one of the things that's a good way for you to kind of get build up those skills to a certain degree is you can even just start by, you know, DMing people in the meeting and being like, hey, what did you mean by X? Or if you had questions afterward, ask them. And then once you've kind of built up a certain amount of confidence in and of, you know, in yourself, to just say, oh, what do you mean by X in the meeting, right? Like, can you explain this thing that you were just talking about? Because there's a lot of differences that can exist in architecture and techniques and libraries and other things like that across different code bases. So that's kind of a first way I would start with it. If your confidence kind of is stemmed from maybe not having as much knowledge around what is being discussed as you would like to, which I find is kind of the common thing, especially with me sometimes. And then once you're in that space, understand that everyone is on your side. The more that everyone knows and the more that everyone participates, the better the group is going to be. Because you, as someone who has fresh ideas and fresh eyes and just different perspective, are inherently going to provide different perspective and different eyes and all of these things that make you unique. That's why you were hired to the team. If they had someone already like you, why would they have hired you? And it's that value in yourself that you need to kind of reflect back onto the team. Do you value the team? Do you value the things you are working on? I'm guessing if you're having these thoughts and feelings, the answer to that is yes. So don't be afraid, especially in a trusted group. If you think that there's opportunity for your kind of immediate management or leadership to be a little bit more reflective of that, because, you know, we're humans too, and we may miss things. And there's always going to be a certain amount of unconscious bias towards, you know, people or things that we particularly understand as leaders. Part of being a team and showing respect is a little bit of leading up and telling, you know, your leadership, hey, I really don't feel like I'm getting the right opportunities to understand certain things or speak about certain things. And we care about y'all. So we want to help you kind of give your best and grow.
Absolutely. And I just want to add that if you are having questions about something, I guarantee you that someone else will appreciate the question because they may not have been able to ask it themselves or may not have even realized that they had a question to ask about that thing. So being able to ask, even if it is a simple question, can reframe the focus of whatever it is you're talking about and provide knowledge to everyone so that everyone gets onto the same page.
And just to add on that, no question is ever dumb. Always ask questions. That's what I've learned from the time that I've been developing. Just ask a question. You'll get a great answer always.
Yeah, and sorry, I want to add one more thing because I just really appreciate that Stacey brought up the inherent knowledge that you do bring to the team. Is if something is hard and it doesn't make a lot of sense, that means that thing could be not well defined. And so if you are going to eventually add more team members to your team, which every company goes through at some point, those people are going to have those same problems. So if you can bring these things up, it could be a point of a fresh perspective that people at the company currently are taking for granted. And then you can improve the process or improve the knowledge or write some definitions or anything to save the next person some time or even save yourself or other team members time when you come back to it in a few months.
Oh yeah, there's this, this brings into another part, at least for me, that like have at least the humility to realize that we are all, you know, 18, maybe 24 months from something we wrote or are working on being a dumpster fire, unless it is, you know, maintained and updated and all kinds of things like that. So as part of that, realize that just like how your code needs to evolve, so do your processes and so does your documentation. And at the end of the day, we are people working with people to make products for other people. And if you don't acknowledge that as part of your team, as part of your processes, you're really missing out on a bunch of different opportunities or actually costing the company money in some regard.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. I hope that answered that question for you. So we do have a couple more, and I got a couple DMs and responses along the same lines of at what point do you consider yourself knowledgeable? So if you are a new developer teaching yourself or starting through some courses and tutorials, at what point do you feel like you can start applying to jobs or start working on projects that have some actual like meat to them?
Did you build an example app? Have you gone through, you know, 3 or 4 tutorials? I'm gonna tell you right now, somebody who has at least a base understanding of Kotlin as a language and can show me a couple of examples of code doesn't have to be sophisticated. You know, if honestly you just have something that pulls down from a known API and shows it on a screen, you good. Like the whole point is that you just need enough to say that I actually care and that I'm trying to learn. It is going to be the amazing amount of expansion and growth and knowledge that you are going to get in working with others that is going to propel you to that next stage. You can really only get so much working in a silo, working on the side, all of those kinds of things. So, and remember, you have to learn how to work in a team or work in a technical team. So there's a lot more to this than just meets the eye. Don't think that, quote, technical skills are going to be have to be a certain level of advanced in order to get your foot in the door.
I love that. That's powerful.
So along those lines, Stacey, I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on the current trends that I see floating around that people are mostly, or companies, I should say, are mostly hiring mid to senior level talent? How do you think people should address that situation?
Companies and places that only hire mid and senior level talent do not provide opportunities for that mid and senior level talent to grow in their capacities of leadership and their ability to contribute to more systems. If you do not bring in relatively low level devs in terms of growth and other things, you're not going to get kind of the perspectives that help you go further. You're not providing the leadership opportunities that allow a mid-level dev to become a senior level dev, right? You're not giving, there's so many things beyond just the scope of I need X amount of things done by this amount of time. You're going to create so much more fulfillment of your team through these other capacities and through their ability to share and learn, that inherently you actually bring productivity up over time. And not only that, you get a good pipeline and you get, I strongly believe that the alumni of an organization are the greatest advocates that you can have for that organization. I want the places that I'm at and the ability that I have to provide any kind of leadership to be a bar that you judge the next places that you work at against. So, you know, it's a little bit of like leadership philosophy as well, but yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's so important, like being able to communicate technical things to someone with less experience than yourself is a huge growth opportunity. So I personally am really disheartened to see that companies are focusing on mid and senior talent. And I really wonder why that is, because there's so much benefit to bringing this in, to like bringing in more inexperienced people and bringing them up to a standard that the company has and growing that talent internally. Like there's so many benefits to, like you mentioned, to so many different avenues individually and company-wide.
It just might be that they think, well, I need somebody who's capable of doing X feature, instead of I need to make it so that the team is capable of doing this feature, right? So everything is culture. Everything is about finding ways to work with one another, bringing that diversity in. Diversity is not just skin color and what you identify as, right? It is the entire spectrum, the way you think, where your background is from. Everything ties into that. And a big part of it absolutely is also bringing in diversity of knowledge.
Yeah, man.
Amazing.
Yeah, the first time to talk to you, I'm the shy person, but I don't know what to talk to you because you don't talk open. My problem is like something about more to IT, computer. That's why I need to learn. So I take a big time to explain.
So I didn't quite catch the end of that.
Yeah.
Could you please say the end of that again, please?
Welcome to your, but you don't come to my internet. I do some hacker inside. I don't do my computer messy. I don't know who the person but I try my best because now I also learning.
I think I would recommend like just writing a DM to us and then we can ask the question for you because it's hardly to hear unless somebody heard that question. I didn't hear it myself.
Because, ladies and gentlemen, because I mix with the world people, sometimes good heart one and bad heart one. So I don't know which person should I follow, no?
Yeah, you can just DM Matt or me and then we can ask it for you.
Now I go.
Okay, and, thank you.
5 minutes, I go on my computer. 5 minutes. You want to rest or not? You're so late.
Okay.
All right. While we wait for that question to come in, we have another person coming up to speak. Abid Khan, how are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you, Matt. Yeah, I have a question for Stacey. You have been in so many fields and a good, great experience. How just you go up with all these learning new things like doing the employer task and things and learning daily new and different things. What was your daily routine actually? How you come up all these things?
So this is a great question. What does it look like from my daily routine or even my weekly routine in being able to kind of keep up with everything that's going on? And the reality is I'm only able to keep up with a certain amount of things. I try to keep my ear to the ground as much as possible. And a great way to do that, especially from the Android community side and the Kotlin community side, is guess what? There's a lovely newsletter put together called Kotlin Weekly. There's also Android Weekly, in which articles have been pruned and kind of the best of the internet exists as far as Android and Kotlin development. Additionally, there is the Kotlin Slack, which has, just all things Kotlin available. There are also a few other Android developer Slacks and Discords that are available. There's also the Android developer Reddit, which is a great way to really see a large scope of ideas and where people are moving. I don't necessarily have the time for all of that. But I also very frequently put talks on in the background while I'm doing other work. And it's a great way, even though I may not be able to, go through and individually say, okay, these are how you do X, I can get the little tidbits in my brain that says, oh, I'm having a problem with this. What was it that thing that I heard and I thought about for like half a second? I can actually like go back and pull out that little piece that I can then further research and be able to go through multiple possibilities. So to that degree, I say the Android Developer Channel is a great place on YouTube. Android Weekly, Kotlin Weekly, the Kotlin Slack, Android Twitter for realsies. Some of the folks that are listed here, absolutely. And, just following what's kind of going on in trends and thoughts, right? And then once we get conferences going back up, one of the things that I do at conferences, and I am a bad conference goer, I'm sorry, everybody, I might only go to maybe half the time going to sessions. Really what I'm there for is to create relationships. and to listen to what everyone's kind of thinking. What are things that people are working on? How do I use the knowledge and research of other people to better my own levels of knowledge and research? You can't know it all. Don't try. Use other people. Yes, I'm using every one of you. Okay, just it's what's happening.
Yeah, that's a great list of resources. I do just want to add that Madonna pinned the Twitter Android developer community to the space. So you can either find it in her profile or in the space here. Just send her a DM to invite you. She moderates that community.
Yes, and I love how so far we've seen great engagement. If you have a question in Android, if you want to find a mentor in there, just get in there and get some help.
Yeah, thanks for the question. Did you have any others, or did that answer your question?
Yeah, I'm okay. Thank you for this. It was really helpful for me.
Yeah, thanks for coming up and joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. I hope everyone's doing all right today. Stacey, how are you? Do you have any questions for us or for members here?
Not really, other than, you know, I'm a resource, and my DMs are open. You know, don't be creepy or weird, because I will block you. But otherwise, you know, as long as you're respectful, I'm here as a resource. And you will also find a number of the other names here are also fantastic resources in various communities, not even just, you know, kind of Android. One thing I would also kind of bring up is don't be exclusive of other technologies in your growth. So your growth as a developer in Android will only get so far before having knowledge in other domains is going to be pertinent for you to be able to do your job. So don't, I would say, like, it's important that you kind of have an idea of, like, how does your API actually work? Like, or all of those kind of growth opportunities you have as you move forward. And to that degree, like, start following some people in those other domain spaces to build that knowledge set up, especially for the more senior people that are listening here today.
Awesome. I do have another question that came in, and it is around Java versus Kotlin. Just if someone is very comfortable with Java and understands it and is happy to develop in it, should they look to invest in learning Kotlin?
Yeah, there's really not that many Android positions that are going to be hiring right now exclusively for Java developers. So if you want to be a very hireable Android developer, I strongly suggest that you have at least a functional knowledge of Kotlin. Not saying that you need to know how everything in coroutines works and flows and continuations and all of that kind of stuff, but you know that you understand that, you know, val is still inherently typed. It just can be multi-typed. All of those kinds of things, right? As you move forward.
Cool. And then a similar question is: Android native, so Kotlin/Java, or Flutter?
Depends on what you're doing. Flutter is an amazing platform in and of itself, and there are a lot of niceties to it. Now, it doesn't actually run the same way that Android native code does in, you know, Kotlin or Java, but it actually kind of runs kind of like you do a game. And to that degree, do we not consider games native? I think we kind of do. There's fantastic opportunity there. I actually kind of strongly push teams towards that. If you're not doing something that really takes advantage or will take advantage of kind of Android native pieces, or you're in a super small development team. If your development team is like 4 or 5 people, maybe, like, why aren't you doing Flutter? Why, you know, especially for both platforms. If you got 4 or 5 people on Android, you good. But like, well, potentially. But if you have, you know, you need to produce objects for Android and iOS, and your mobile development team might just be you or a handful of others,
why are you trying to develop for each platform independently when you're not doing something that is dependent on, you know, specific platform capabilities? So not only that, Flutter for web is really pretty darn good. If you've done anything with Kotlin multi-platform and Compose, Compose for web is not at all, like, hardly related to Compose for Android or desktop. So, think about what you're trying to accomplish. Tools are different depending on what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Picking the right tool for the job is what's important. And depending on your circumstances, one might be better than the other. All right, Madonna, do you have anything for us?
Yes, I have one last question that I received. I'm going to call it last because I've not received any other on my side. And this is directed to Stacy. And this is what it's saying. Hey, Stacy, I follow you a lot and enjoy what you're doing for the community. I was wondering, for someone who hasn't given any talks, what advice can you give me and how can I gain courage?
Ooh, this is the best. This is the best. I love teaching people how to do public speaking. Really, it's starting with your local or kind of a small community of people that you trust. So a great example of this is GDG. And I do know a number of folks in this list right now that are either GDG leaders, or they are people who are part of their local GDG, GDG meaning Google Developer Group, Android Developer Group or whatever it might be. Remember that anything that you've spent time either dealing with that was difficult, or something that you learned and maybe had some things that weren't obvious, somebody else is interested in learning from your learning. So anytime you encounter that, that is an opportunity to speak, even if it's just something like 15 minutes. I'll bring up a good example. I gave a little mini presentation internally where I work just a couple weeks ago on tools in the developer options on Android. And there were people that had been doing Android development for a number of years that had no idea that these tools even existed. You can just be surprised sometimes where, maybe there's just things that aren't covered, or there's, kind of assumed knowledge is one thing that I've been kind of critical on, Android development advocates on, is that there's a relatively high level of assumed knowledge, assumed historical knowledge. Those are opportunities to share, or things that, you talk to somebody and they're like, oh, I didn't know about that. What is that magic thing you just showed me? And then that's a great jumping off point.
Amazing. Yeah. And another interesting thing to add there is, even if it's a topic that's been covered before, being able to cover it with a different style or communications, format, anything like that, can help someone who learns in that format learn it better than if it was a different one. So if it's a video or a blog post or audio, whatever it ends up being, even just your personal writing style, some people will get more out of it than if it was a different format. So don't be afraid to do something if you feel like, oh, this has already been talked about before.
Yeah, and they said, thank you, Stacy. And also, please, if you're not following Stacy, please follow her. She's amazing. You need to stay connected with Stacy. And also, Stacy, I just want to say again, thank you very much for taking this opportunity to come speak with us, engage with the community. I truly appreciate your time. It's valuable. And I just want to say thank you. I think I'm also saying thank you for Matt. Thank you, Stacy.
Thank you, too, for bringing me on. I love kind of sharing as much as I can and providing a little bit of fresh perspective on my, I guess, old experience at this point.
Yeah, this has been really wonderful. And if you have time for it, I do have two more questions. The first of which being, how can someone measure their personal skills, whether they can consider themselves junior, mid-level, or senior plus, anything beyond that? How would you recommend they classify themselves when looking for a job?
Well, considering I'm somebody who's worked on hiring rubrics and all of that kind of stuff, really it comes down to a certain amount of core concepts. Do you feel like you have a general understanding of how applications are built and bring yourself, you know, kind of relatively complete, then you're, you know, kind of a mid-level dev. If you are able to bring forward and kind of, you know, develop features from the ground up, you are a senior level dev. If you take a, if you're able to take a set of requirements and really come down through it from a product perspective, then you're a step above that. When it comes to actual technical skill, for the most part, it doesn't increase that dramatically past the kind of senior level developer side of things. It's all of the ability to create cohesiveness and architecture around all of that that brings you to the next stages, right? As well as, you know, communication skills and soft skills. So really, it's the take a very clean look at what you have been developing, where you want to grow, and are you able to kind of take things from, you know, a requirement set and actually build a full thing? And those things will give you little trigger points as to where you are. And also just ask, talk to coworkers and be like, hey, what are some ways that I can improve? Where do you think I really am in terms of my skill set? What do, if you're not having honest conversations with your manager or your kind of leadership team about what do I need to work on to get to the next stage, or what do I need to do in order to grow within my own role, you're really doing a discredit to yourself.
Yeah, very true. And thanks for that excellent answer. So on to the final question. Do you have any book recommendations for anyone, or what are you reading, or what have you read recently that you really enjoyed?
So I am currently reading Breaking Through Bias by Andrea S. Kramer and Elton Harris. And this is specifically around my areas of growth, right? So communication techniques for women to succeed at work. And I change what I'm reading at the time in order to focus in on the skill sets that I'm working on. So that's just, you know, the reality is that unconscious bias exists. And so, you know, how do we actually move forward and kind of do all that stuff as kind of, you know, women in tech or, you know, a minority represented group? That's where my mindset is, at least at the moment. I also recommend the Developer Playbook. And that's a kind of set of perspective and bringing goals along with, you know, what you're doing in your career. And then I'm going to have to pull this one up just a second. But Colt McAnlis, if you know Colt used to be an Android developer advocate from Google. And he actually wrote a book called Plan, Act, Impact, a playbook to elevate your perspective and unstick your career. That is another kind of one that I've been progressing through. So I'm currently reading those two books at the moment.
Awesome. Sounds like very important topics and something that we all should educate ourselves on a bit more. Cool. Madonna, do you have anything?
Yes, I have a question. This is just my question to Stacey. Stacey, do you have any plans to write any books in the future, or have you written any books that you can recommend, your own books?
So it's kind of a strange thing. I now have mentions in three books, but I've been low-key working on kind of a whole new format for a book with another person in the Android community, although this book is not necessarily geared towards the Android community. So I'm not going to give it away, but it does involve at least one hobby that I don't really post on Twitter, but I post in other forums. So I think that there's a lot of analogs to just the work that we do all the time as developers to a lot of other
kind of creative endeavor. So, you know, there's more to come, hopefully, on that front.
There you go. You heard it. Stacey has a book coming out.
Well, I don't have anything. I have like a ridiculous Trello board. That's all I've got at the moment.
When it's ready, we'll definitely help you get it out there. Thank you very much, Stacey, for being an amazing guest today and for sharing with us. And also, I want to mention, if my voice today was very cracky, yesterday I woke up with no voice. So I had to get to the hospital and got some steroid shots. I don't know what was happening. And turns out I didn't have any COVID, so it's weird. But thank God I'm okay today.
Yeah, wow, I'm glad you're doing all right. And thank you for being here and talking with us despite all that.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, I woke up with no voice. Like, I was, whoa, what's up? My kids were laughing at me. They thought it was a joke. Can you imagine that?
It may have been RSV, to be honest. You're another person with little kids. You get it only from little children. We had to deal with that pretty recently.
Oh, wow, that's a good point. Because my doctor didn't tell me exactly what it was because they couldn't find anything. So they just said, okay, we're going to give you this shot. It's going to help you. And it helped for sure. It did help.
All right. Well, I think we can start getting wrapped up here. But thank you so much for joining us today, Stacey. And thanks to everyone who joined us in the audience today and asked questions. Just, I know this week and last week have been really tough with the situation in Ukraine. And really appreciate everyone taking the time and energy to be here while that goes on. And our hearts do go out to anyone who is directly or even tangentially impacted. So thanks for being here. Thanks for being strong, and we really appreciate you.
Yeah, and on that note, I would also like to add that Josie did share MatchMe. I think that was for United Nations. If you want to donate, you can please follow Josie has been an amazing GDE, and also he's part of the community and a great contributor. Please, if you follow him, you'll find the link and you can donate. And also, again, like Matt said, we're praying and have you on your thoughts.
All right. Have an excellent weekend, everyone. Thanks for coming. We so appreciate you being here, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Yes, goodbye, Stacey. Everybody.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming.